We got a motor home. We got some sand. We're not going anywhere.
Our soft cantaloupe heads are so vulnerable. Let's just stay on the bridge.
I don't want to risk maybe bumping my head because that could be the end of me.
Even a light bump. Oh, I bruise like a peach because I am one.
I don't know if you know this, but my father was also a peach.
Welcome back to the Walking Dead podcast by LSG Media. I'm Dean. I'm joined by Matthew, and we are going to be talking about The Walking Dead. This episode is called Swear, and I'm looking forward to talking about it. Matthew Anderson, how are you doing this fine evening?
Quite good. Quite good. I'm feeling, I don't know about you, I'm riding pretty high off this episode.
Oh, look at you there, kiddo. Huh? You pumped, are you?
I'm a little happy. A little awesome. Happy to be getting back to our girl Tara and our man Heath we got for like 2 more minutes.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about all these chicks. And I just want to say welcome if this is the first time you've joined us. And of course, welcome to our returning listeners. And if this is your first time, we're going to have some opening impressions. We will then explicate our way through the episode, get to some final thoughts and observations, and throw some listener comments in there along the way. Might even have a whole segment that we've been doing for 2 years and I forgot to mention. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. So Matthew, let's jump right to it this week. What are your initial impressions of Swear?
Initial impressions? Man, I think this might be my favorite episode of the season so far. Like, it's fucking good. And that's it's saying something that my other, probably my second most favorite episode, also introduced a new community, the episode with Ezekiel and the kingdom. This is the avenue, you know, we've talked about this. This is the avenue I've wanted to see the show go down for a while, of really broadening the world, showing us new places, just making the Walking Dead universe bigger. And because, like we've talked about, the show's been pretty isolationist for a while in a way. And of course, that's interesting because we love Rick and we love our guys, but it can't just go on that way forever. So I like the idea of this show getting to these multiple communities interacting and the complications that ensue from it. And like we've already been talking about and predicting, maybe a collaboration against the Saviors. So all of that stuff, I feel like we really are going in that direction. That has me excited. And I've really, really enjoyed getting back to Tara. I like her. I've forgotten how much I liked her character. If you'd asked me before this episode, oh, Tara, is that a character you care about or are fond of? I'd be like, yeah, I care. Like, I'm interested in her. I've always thought she was pretty interesting character, especially after she met Glenn and kind of formed that whole bond, and you know, we got to see all that good shit. But no, man, I really enjoyed seeing her again. She was fucking fun to watch. She's a good actress, Alana Masterson. And I thought all of the performances here are pretty fucking good. This is a community for once where I'm like, I get their ideology. I'm like, it's harsh in a way that all fucking post-apocalyptic communities probably have a harsh mission statement at this point. But I get it. I fucking sympathize with these people, even though they're pretty cold-blooded in some ways. So yeah, man, this is a major step up from last week, for one. I feel pretty fucking solid about this episode.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Excuse me. When I was watching this episode, I was downstairs with a couple of friends, and the four of us were watching this episode. And during the episode, there was lots of different jokes going around and a lot of flipping through telephones while the episode was on in the background. And I realized that I wasn't really paying attention, and that kind of concerned me. And then I watched it again, and I thought, this definitely is... How should I say this? I guess I could say it was the episode that annoyed me the least, and I enjoyed watching it. I think Tara's great. Yeah. I'm a fan of Tara. I think Alana, is it Alana Masterson maybe?
Yeah,
she is awesome. I think this character is really good. I think she's a fine actress. I liked her time on screen, and you know, I appreciated the fact that while I was watching it a second time and taking notes, that I paid attention the whole time. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, my attention span wasn't wandering. I wasn't rolling my eyes too heavily.
This episode had some momentum to it, which I feel like has been a little lacking.
Yeah, like, I just don't care enough. Do you know what I'm saying? I didn't there's been so much like filler stuff going on that I just haven't really cared a lot about what was going on lately. And I gave myself pause. And the first thing that struck me this week was I liked the beach. I liked the salty fucking surf. I like the sand. I like all of this stuff. I wanted that. The change of scenery, the change of pace, the brightness, the saturation of colors. It's not so dull and gray and, you know, Negan talking shit and all this stuff. And I actually really enjoyed this episode for what it was. It's funny because I think back to Ezekiel and how he was cool, and I think back to that episode. But I'm also thinking, like, there was less, and I know I don't want to judge a show on this alone, but there was less that annoyed me this week and more that I found myself going, oh, this is kind of interesting. Like, I see some potential here. I hope we can do something with this. And then part of me was like, man, do I want to get into another community? Do I want to see expansion? I think overall, and viewership will tell you this in terms of Walking Dead ratings, my interest is just lower than it has been lately, which is unfortunate because we've talked about this before, Matt. Like, we've watched the show since the first season. Well, I didn't. I've watched it since maybe the second or third season because I caught them all on Netflix, you know.
I watched this baby opening night of the first episode.
Yeah, I think maybe I watched season two on demand or something back when I had cable and stuff. And now I have like DirecTV, so I don't have that. But I fucking blather. Doesn't matter. My point is this. I definitely think my expectations have grown higher for this show in a weird way, and that's probably why I don't feel as attached to it as I once did. And I feel like it's kind of come on even in the last 1 to 2 seasons. Now, that could be a lot. A lot of that could be said that there's a lot of great TV now. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that's really good to watch. There was, you know, there's Stranger Things. There's House of Cards. There's fucking, you know, there's Game of Thrones. There's just a lot of television out there that's so good that the bar keeps getting raised. And I feel like it's just a competitive place. And I feel like a lot of listeners are, our listeners and even some viewers of the show almost feel like The Walking Dead is kind of fucking them, like a little bit. Not that they owe the fans anything, because I don't really believe in any of that. I don't think you owe anybody anything with your creation. Yeah. I think that you can do whatever you want with your own creation, and then the fans will do whatever they want, and you can all fucking go from there. But I hate when people... I don't like uppity fandom where they're like, you owe us something with this character, or you owe us this, or you... Like, nobody fucking owes you anything. They only owe themselves whatever the fuck they want to do with their own show. But on the same side of that coin, you could also say, but they need to understand that some people might just stop watching. I don't really believe there's any contractual obligations between a fucking watcher of the show and the show itself. And I guess my long-winded explanation of what I'm trying to say here is I think that the quality of the show has gone down over time, and I think that the viewership has gone down as a result of that. And I guess you could speculate as to maybe other market forces are putting pressure on them, like other good shows, but it's no secret their ratings are going down. Now, let's not get it twisted. Their ratings are still higher than everything else on cable, right? They're still right. Blowing everyone else away. So they have, you know, literally millions to spare. But
yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, your hardcore fans and the fans that got you there are probably, some are going to be very Karen Lomas, and that they're going to be very passionate, very open-minded. And then there are going to be fans who have continually felt the show's decline, like LSK, who were just like, fuck this shit, you know? So it's just one of those things where I've been thinking a lot about The Walking Dead and where it's been going. And when I pushed play on this episode, part of my problem was when I watch it the first time, I'm just so, I feel like a lack of investment. And then I kind of half-ass watched it because I was downstairs with a few people. Then I sat and watched it again and I thought, well, wait a second. This feels much more interesting to me than any other episode I've seen so far. And I liked Ezekiel and I liked Shiva, but I don't know if there was enough time spent on that stuff. I think there's cool potential there. But there was something about, and we've seen Carol's shtick, and we've seen Morgan's shtick, and we've seen their banter, and we know what that's like, and there's nothing new there. Like, the stuff with Ezekiel was interesting because Ezekiel was interesting. But yes, Morgan and Carol are the same. They're like, you can't stop me, but I'm going to stop you. Blah, blah, blah. That dynamic is just old to me. And I liked seeing Tara. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, I like seeing Tara struggle. I like seeing Tara be like, okay, I am not the most martial person in the world. I've had to learn how to be a little bit. When Glenn found her all that time ago in that little fenced off area and brought her along, she's come a long way. And it's cool to see her go through struggle. It's cool to see growth in an arc in her. And I think focusing on Tara was a smart move by The Walking Dead. I think that was a good play to go with Tara.
Exactly. And I feel like that's, you know, the show's taken flack before, and sometimes, you know, reasonably, that you're maybe focusing on characters we don't care about or not giving characters we do care about enough. And I feel like this, you know, Tara, Tara's an interesting character because I don't think anybody would be like, oh, she's a fan favorite, but people like her. Like, we're all still interested in her. And shifting that kind of focus to her in this episode, I agree with you. I think it was a good call to expand on that character a little bit, give her own story. And I feel like this episode as a whole was really solid because it did something they haven't done in a while of making it a self-contained story. Like, this is Tara's episode. It's very much removed from the goings-on before. It's not an episode that's just a sequel to the one before it or all lead up to the one that's going to come after. It's its own story. It has this momentum of, you know, Tara literally waking up, and it is now about her, and she encounters these people, has, you know, interesting interactions with them and learning about them, and then conflict and getting away from them. It's this entire arc all within one episode, and it has a very nice balance, which we haven't seen in a while for sure, of action and fucking legitimately cool to watch gory zombie set pieces and interesting characters that have, you know, some flesh to them. I think they hit that balance really well here. That's why this felt so, I don't know, satisfying to me.
Yeah, and I think the other part of it is, they're kind of talking about it in the chat, which we should mention. This is being recorded live on Mixlr, mixlr.com/lsg-media. That's mixlr.com/lsg-media, where we record all of our shows live. You can get that schedule at schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. That's schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. We got a chat going right now, and they're talking about a couple things. Brian Campbell's in there, of course, longtime listener, and he says, I've talked about Tara and being real on the Facebook thread, and I want to talk about that. And then another longtime listener, Warboy, says everyone loves Rick and Daryl, and there's actually a little bit of dissent on that, I feel like. I definitely like Rick, and I've liked him for a long time, and you know, if you've listened to this show, that I've apologized for Rick for a long time. I don't give a shit about Daryl. But I will say this. Rick.
You're like, fuck it, play Easy Street again. Fuck Daryl.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Even Rick is, I'm kind of losing interest in Rick. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm losing interest in it. I'm losing interest in Rick in that he's sort of become this stale character who is now having to bend the knee to Negan, and now he's acting, you know, like he is just this dominated thrall. And there's no real dynamicness to Rick anymore. He's just like, that's the way it is. This is the way we got to live now. That's it. And he watched some guys get their brains bashed in, and he had some, you know, good acting there. I'm not going after Andrew Lincoln. I'm just saying, like, he has become less interesting to me because I feel like we've seen the sides of Rick that we're going to see, and I don't think we're going to see anything else from him.
And I think it's a pretty, and, you know, I'm not going to sit here and try to qualify how good I think the risk is, but I do think it's a major risk, for better or for worse, to make your main hero character leveled out and so horrifically humbled. It's an interesting arc to take in the sense of, like, that's some risky shit. It's like watching Superman get, you know, all his fucking powers kicked away, and how long is this gonna go on? Like, how long are we gonna see the depowered Superman? Like, that could be interesting, or it could just be fucking like, fuck, now why do I care? So I think there's an interesting gamble in that, but it's high stakes, and they could very easily fuck it up. Some people say they already have.
And you know what I think that comes down to? As you're talking, as I'm listening to you, and as I'm thinking, I feel like perhaps it's not Rick so much as the situation they've placed him in. I have always wished, when I heard Jeffrey Dean Morgan was going to be the show, I don't read the comics, okay? I do not read the comics. I knew that Glenn got his brains bashed out. I knew that. And I knew that Abraham took a crossbow bolt in the eye in the comics. Of course, they switched that up in the show. Mm-hmm. Now, what I think the problem is, my expectations, and I will freely admit that when you have expectations of something and they do something different, that your part of your gut reaction is going to kind of be a little bit disappointed, right? And I guess that's my own ego, which is, boy, I'm a little disappointed in what they decided to do with Negan. I thought, based on the fact there's going to be Jeffrey Dean Morgan, based on some of that early stuff where we had them on their knees before we got the fake out, like, hey, we're not going to show you who they killed. I realized, oh my God, we're going to be dealing with this guy who has this charisma, who did this brutal act to them, but then he's going to end up having a relationship, even though it's going to be weird, with the group. And we're not seeing any dynamism. Is that the word I'm looking for? To any of this. We, especially this week, it just confirms it. He literally executed all these men and children. And the things he did to Rick. And it's just, he's just this big, bad, big boss video game character that you have to go around, like, this is what you have to do. You have to go around, rally up your forces, get everyone together, make friends, and then go fight the big boss and win. Now, I'm making a lot of presumption here. I'm really guessing at what might be the case. But it's too bad that we haven't seen anything dynamic between Negan and any of these groups. It's simply just we bludgeon you into submission. And there is no charisma. There is no. He's just a straight marauder. There's no. He doesn't even come off like a feudal lord who's like, all right, you're going to, you know, we're going to protect you. We're going to take care of you. Like this, we're going to protect you shit. We haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
It hasn't even happened. And it just makes Negan completely, in other words, I feel like there's a lot of potential here to have interesting relationships between Negan and the people he's subjugating. But instead, it's straight up, we're going to browbeat and bully you down until you amass the force necessary to have an insurrection and take me out. And it's too bad, you know?
The only counter to that, and we talked about this a lot in the episode where we get a look in at Daryl being captured in the Savior's compound, that the only counterweight would, in my mind at least, would be that we see a very complex and giving relationship between Regan and his top guys, his lieutenants. You know, these guys like Dwight and Simon, those guys. If he's giving them this really awesome lifestyle, like almost as like governors, you know, beneath him, it would be interesting to see how he keeps order through them by making their lives really good. But we haven't really seen any of that
either.
We have to see kind of one or the other. I agree with you there that it's like, because I mean, otherwise you're just watching the house of cards that all fucking tyrants live in. That it's like, if you're this fucking awful forever, eventually people are going to band together and crush you. Like,
sure.
You just can't be a monster forever and all time.
No, and somebody will sacrifice themselves.
Yeah,
that's what they will do. That's what happens. Somebody will you will do enough damage to somebody that when you are in their presence, they will turn a pistol on you and blow your brains out, regardless of the repercussions.
Yeah,
that's gonna happen. You can't go around murdering all these people and not have one guy be like, I'm gonna get my revenge on you, no matter what. You know, it's the classic tropey. The guy's in the courtroom and the dude fucking shoots him in the courtroom, right? That's fucking going to happen to Negan. And nobody's going to be able to stop it. And I think when Negan goes down, that fucking Saviors are just completely and utterly a mess.
Or just turns into factions. It turns into each other alive.
Yeah, I think it turns into completely open rebellion. I just feel like if this guy, I feel like if this guy took everything from me, it's easy for me to say. I would be hard pressed not to be like, okay, he's dead no matter what, because I have nothing left in my life.
Dude, hold me back. Dude, fuck, I'm gonna turn my hat around. Hold me back, dude.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if this guy killed your dad, your sister,
your
mom,
I know what you mean.
Bashed their fucking brains in, and you're like, okay, I guess I'll go get you stuff. You know, I feel like even most people, especially in the apocalyptic world, would just blow him away and then turn the gun on themselves and be like, he's out.
Oof. Oof. Yeah.
You know? I I still like the thing we talked about earlier, which is what Warboy's bringing up, is biding your time for that opportunity to go after him, you know, being smart and seeing that. But we're not, at least not on the surface, they're not making that obvious. We're not seeing that. We're seeing people do things like, we want to hide from him, which I fucking can't wait to talk about. We're seeing people do things like, all right, this is the new life. This is what it is. There's too much risk here. And I will say this, that's one part of this that I think is realistic. I think when faced with overwhelming odds, you're going to bend the knee. I think that's pretty normal. And then wait it out and try to figure out a time that you can do something. I also think that they put Rick in a position where he has too much at stake. He has a son and a daughter. So it's hard for him. It's hard for him to do anything at this point because the wrath of Negan's rebuttal is not going to be pleasant for Rick if Rick can't fight back. But yeah. I'm looking forward to talking about what Netanya's people did, because Jesus Christ, have I not said it on this very show?
yep.
Right? It's cool to see that. It's cool to see something like that. But I guess we've got some opening impressions out of the way, and we'll work through this as we go. So let's get cracking with... what's it called?
Swear.
Swear.
I could have killed you back in the village. Let me go. You don't have anything left. Your people are dead. The saviors. That satellite post you took out. You have no idea what you started. We didn't start anything. We ended it. They're dead.
You didn't stop them.
You can't stop them. That was just an outpost. There are more saviors, more outposts. And if they know about your friends, it's already too late for them.
The saviors? They did this to you. They're the ones that killed all your men.
Well, we open on the conversation between Newt in one of her finest roles in Waterworld.
Yep, I agree. That's definitely a Waterworld role.
Definitely.
He has gills.
He's the postman.
So she's like, one hit. Eh.
I'm very, very 9 years old.
Yeah, she's very 9 years old. Not going to lie, I kind of wanted to throw her in the water.
There's just, yeah, when you see that kind of like unearned confident arrogance in a kid, it's just like, ugh. Like, I know you still need to learn and I got to teach you, but I kind of want to backhand you also, though.
Yeah, like, I don't mean kill her. Just throw her in the water, muck her up a little bit.
Yeah, you fucking swim your way back.
Straighten her out a little bit. But yeah, this is Cindy and Rachel we're meeting. Of course, Rachel being the young girl and Cindy being the young woman. And of course, they find a beached Tara. I'm assuming that she's got movie coma, so she's unconscious. No visible wounds. She's just going to be asleep, just slumber time. That's what happens when in a TV show, when you are wounded or you go through some kind of trauma, you just fall asleep for like 9 hours or 12 hours.
Yeah, you just sleep.
Yeah. No wounds, completely unwounded, but unconscious on the water.
That's how it works, right?
That's doctors. TV for you. Yeah. She's got her color looks fine, you know, got some juicy red lips on her, and she's fucking just taking a little nappy poo, just sleeping on the shore. I know she does mention how she was pretending at one point, but anyway, Rachel wants to stick her with the spear. She wants to jam her up with the spear. Cindy says they don't have to, but Rachel says that they have to, and that she wants to.
Yeah, so that was the part where I go, ugh. Creep.
A little creepy bitch. And
I wanna see her brain ooze out of her nose. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, good lord.
We don't even have violent video games to blame anymore. You're just a fucking monster, actually.
They drag Tara away from the water up the shore. We get our opening credits and we go back in time. And we go to Heath and Tara.
Finally, get a look at our boy Heath.
Yeah, he's alive.
It's been a fucking minute there.
We saw a shot by friend Scott, and we was hoping to see Heath, too.
Right? And we get, you know, I do like this exchange they have here. I like that, you know, going back in time, I like that we have revealed, you know, how people were really feeling, not about the Saviors, not about Negan, but about their initial incursion, their attack on the Saviors, and how that is still not sitting right with Heath.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that shows some realism and consistency, considering that he was an Alexandrian, or is an Alexandrian.
Yeah.
I like that his spirits are down. I like this banter between the two. This is what I mean about Tara, or specifically, you know, Masterson. I just think she's good on camera. I think she's a natural. She strikes me as very real.
Yes. Right? I was going to say, she's a person who, her performance feels like a very casual, real person's, the way right. they move and talk.
They went farther than they were supposed to, he says, and he's not convinced there's anything fine. So the gist of this conversation is, they're not sure about supplies. He's not feeling too confident that they're going to find anything. They talk about how Hilltop should come through for them. At least Tara does.
Yeah.
But he's not convinced. And of course, he's bothered by the murder of Negan's men, which he goes on about. We killed them for milk and corn, he says. And he says, I get it now. If it's between you and someone else, you take out who you have to. You get to keep going. And that's what he's saying here. Which kind of plays into this episode, where this is the dramatic through line that we're going to push, or should I say maybe even thematically what they're deciding on this week. Because we see this out of Heath, we see this out of Cindy, we see this out of Beatrice, we see a lot of this. Being put in a position where you're killing because you're protecting yourself, because you have to. That is essentially what this episode gets at. And
not just that as the idea, but also just can you be a part of a community, or can a community of people work together if that's always the naked motive, is that I'll fucking kill anybody that I have to get out of something. I'll leave somebody behind to die if I have to save myself. You know, no reaching out to other people. I think that's at question here. And, you know, Heath is very uncomfortable with the idea. He's like, in a way, he's saying that's how it is and I'm coming to terms with it. But he's still, you can tell he's not like cool with that. Like, he's still wrestling with it, whereas Tara is kind of taking the opposite path of like, no, that's not how it is. You're misunderstanding.
Right. And I think she's still kind of in denial.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I mean, maybe not. She says, it's bullshit, basically. She says, it's bullshit. And he says, no. Everyone who wants to stay alive. In other words, she says, that's bullshit. That's not you. And he says, no, it is. And it is me. And it's everyone else who wants to stay alive.
Yeah.
And after today, we go back, even if we only have rusty cans, Heath says. So Heath's had enough of the road, and he wants to get home. And, you know, Tara kind of sits on what he says for a minute and thinks about it, which I think is interesting. And that's the dynamic they're pushing this episode. Like, you guys went and killed Negan's men, and here you are in a situation where you find these women, and they're trying to kill you, and you're in this weird position. And that's, there's a lot of this stuff in The Walking Dead. There's a lot of these ideas that they try to put forth. They try to create these ethical quandaries for you to wrap your head around and to try to understand.
Yeah. Is it really okay to just assume everybody's an enemy? I mean, that's what we see that little girl, you know, Rachel is already fully indoctrinated in. You know, she's just like, yeah, that's fine. It's fine to kill a person.
Right.
I want to.
And oddly enough, her saying I want to is probably just her trying to prove herself.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As a 9-year-old. But I think that what you said a moment ago, the enemy piece, was assuming enemies. I don't even know if it's that so much. They're just assuming that they're just weighing the risk. It's too risky to expose our hidden camp to a stranger who may have another group.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we have to kill them. I mean, we've seen this, you know, there's primitive tribes. You fucking try to go to their island and they just start whipping spears at you from the shoreline. They don't want you near them.
Stay the fuck off, yeah.
But then again, there's stories of Native Americans going, oh, hello, people with buckle hats and weird shoes. Come on in, right? So
yep.
It just depends on their experience with travelers. It just depends on if they've had this warlike situation before. The more shit of that you see, the more you're going to understand that they're going to be more xenophobic, the worse of a history they have with neighbors. And obviously, the people that I believe it's called Oceanside Court.
That's it.
I believe they are 100% in a situation where they've faced horrific loss. Horrific. And because of that, they are very cautious. They cannot risk exposure to the camp. And that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, like, I do sympathize with their camp. You know, I'm interested in getting to those moments later and talking about what we think is the leadership or what we think is just, I don't know, maybe the prevailing mindset among the people who live there that's taking hold.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's funny. You have this civilization or encampment. Civilization is a bit much. You have this encampment, Oceanside Court, where these people have camo netting. They've withdrawn into this area. They're pretty well hidden, insulated. But as we see, Tara kind of just waltzes in. So, I mean, that's kind of on them.
That's true.
You need to set up a situation where that's just not going to happen, figure out a way to deter people. But I guess that's easier said than done. It's not, you know, where they're at. They just might not have the material to block people from getting to them, and they just have to rely on subterfuge, and it just didn't work. And part of that is on Cindy, because Cindy, of course, is kind of a soft heart, right? Her decision to not off Tara is what put them in this position where they have to deal with Tara.
That is it. I mean, I guess we can basically jump to that. I mean, she convinces Rachel not to kill her, to leave her alone. And after this conversation, you know, we cut back to with Heath and Tara, we get back to her waking up out of her fucking movie coma on the beach with some delicious water bottles and uncooked fish. Yummy.
Yeah. And she starts stalking Cindy.
That is it. Stalking her back to the camp.
Yep. We also noticed a couple of Roman numerals on her wrist. Did you catch that?
I did. And I was wondering if that had ever been talked about in a prior episode, if there was actually meaning to that, or if that's just something she's always had.
If there was, I don't recall.
Yeah, I certainly don't remember.
So she leaves Tara a couple water bottles and some wrapped up fish. She even leaves her a spear. Tara opens her eyes, grabs her water and rock, sees Cindy in the distance, spies on her. Cindy walks away. Tara follows her, spear brandished.
Do you think she was going to eat that fish?
Yeah.
I had a moment where I was like, is she going to go full fucking girl who loved Tom Gordon and just fucking bite fish head? Like, I kind of wondered if they were going to go there. But nah, we didn't get a look.
Tara continues to follow Cindy through the woods. Tara finds a settlement through the bush. She hears two women talking. She sneaks around. She sees children running around and playing. She starts to take this place in. It's very camouflaged, very hidden. There's a lot of foliage around.
Very jungle-esque.
Absolutely. Yeah. She spots a couple. I was like, what is this, fucking Far Cry? She playing Far Cry right now?
Yeah, are you about to take out this base?
Yeah.
Maybe you can unleash one of the caged tigers in there. That'll distract the guards.
Absolutely. You should probably fly by on your ATV with a rocket launcher. Just start blowing up houses and shit.
Just go in the loud style. Yep.
I like it. I always went in stealth. I always went in stealth in those games.
I usually did. If I got, you know, what happened to me in those games, if I tried stealth and then some asshat caught me, I'd be like, well, that's it. I'm rolling in rocket launchers next time, fuckers.
Yeah, whenever I would get spotted, I would go like Vasquez from Aliens. I'd be like, let's rock, and just open it up. Fuck all the silenced knife shit.
As fun as it is, still going to roll out. But I don't know about you. I really liked this whole sequence of her going in and the quietness of it. For one, I really enjoyed looking at a community working without, like, we didn't get introduced to the community for a while. It wasn't like when Rick and company rolled into Hilltop for the first time and, oh, hello, I'm the leader of Hilltop. This is what we look like. You know, and we got the it was kind of belated, but our introduction to the Saviors, you know, compound, we still kind of got a montage of this is how it looks here, this is how things run. I liked this just observer knowing nothing about any of it, kind of just seeing this strange, secretive place at work and on a normal day. That was kind of a cool, you know, point of view. And I really loved when we hear the kind of like clicking bell sounds and everybody fucking gets up and just heads to the armory and she's like, oh, fuck. Like,
sure.
They have spotted you somehow. Like, that was the tension build up there was actually really cool.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think that's a great point. I also was thinking it's cool to watch Tara slowly realize what happens and then they just open fire. But this just goes to show you Natanya's people here at the Oceanside, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
They are very well prepared.
Dude, yeah, like they're, you know, we can talk about, oh, they let somebody in and an intruder still got past, but their response time is pretty fucking on point. Like, they hear a bell, everybody grabs guns, and within another 10 seconds, they are firing on her and surrounding her.
Right, and it wasn't like this big, I like the sneakiness here. I like that they have these signals and bells, which might be confusing to you. You don't real, nobody's shouting over there, look, they're
yeah,
they got an indication as to where they were, and then they go and they make that move. It's awesome.
And that was
this is
it.
The kind of stuff I like. I like contingencies. I like plans to go after people if there's some sort of security risk, where exactly. You don't ever see that with Rick's group. And this is one of the things we complain about so much. And it was cool that it was something addressed. Two major things that we talk about in this show is, why not pack up and vacate Alexandria? Which is precisely what Oceanside Court did, even though they ended up getting found out anyway. And then, oh no, they didn't. That's the point.
No, they
right?
didn't. They have eluded everybody until
they've
now.
Eluded everybody. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. And then we have the we have this guard setup system, and they have a shitload of weaponry, by the way.
Yeah, I know. When I saw just a quick glimpse of the inside of that armory, I was like, that's as good as, maybe better than anything that Alexandria ever had. I mean, that looked fucking stacked.
It was stacked, no doubt. But yeah, she, you know, they end up apprehending her, right?
They do. They run her down, and you know, this is a moment. I think it's with Beatrice.
Short
is her
hair.
Name? The short hair one. Yeah.
Yep.
She. I really actually like this moment. She gets the shotgun out of her hand and has it on her, and Beatrice has her whole, just do it, and yeah. Then just, nah, fuck you, butt crack to the face. It was a nice hit.
Yeah, it was cool.
Enjoyed all this.
Tara says she didn't try to hurt anybody, et cetera, et cetera. It's a tense moment. She's surrounded, of course. She almost gets shot by Rachel, and Cindy steps in, and then they overwhelm Tara. They did just, there's too many people there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the number, I mean, they are on top of her in a heartbeat, and this is the moment where Natanya comes out and is right in front of her.
Yeah. And we flash back, though. We're going to come back to that. We go back to Tara and Heath. They investigate the bridge. It's littered with tarps, tents, vehicles, and other debris. They find a dump truck, and the dumping bed is still up, a pile of sand. And then Tara goes for a bag, and the sand zombies attack. Pretty cool.
Dude. I really liked this, actually. I loved the lead up of just the strangeness of, okay, this is maybe a little community that had built up on a bridge, which I, for one, actually do think is an interesting idea, yeah. That you can control all your exits, and hell, you can have little escape rafts underneath the bridge if you really need to. I'm like, that's kind of smart. It's compelling. But the moment where you come upon that strange scene of all that gigantic pile of sand right in the middle of, like, why would this be here? And then Heath kind of dusting off a little part of it, and it's just fucking littered with empty spent brass, and you're like, oh god, this was a big engagement that went fucking wrong. And then don't pull, fucking zombies, sand zombies everywhere. I like that.
I liked it too. I do like the idea of being set up on a bridge. I think this is an interesting premise. I'd like to see more of this, people set up in weird positions. A bridge is a little funky because your instinct is it's exposed, but you do control the only two ways in.
Yeah.
Obviously, it didn't work. Whatever they had planned wasn't good enough.
They might have just had fucking melon heads manning the fucking the armored spots, not doing their jobs.
Yeah, right. And yeah, they.
You know who it is? These are probably the people that fucking Merle and Daryl saved back in like season 3, or fucking stuck on that bridge. And you're like, you know what? Let's just stay here. This is smart. This is safe.
We don't want to.
Those rednecks
anywhere.
Really figured it out for us.
Yeah, right. We got a motor home. We got some sand. We're not going anywhere.
Our soft cantaloupe heads are so vulnerable. Let's just stay on the bridge.
I don't want to risk maybe bumping my head because that could be the end of me.
Even a light bump. Oh, I bruise like a peach because I am one.
I don't know if you know this, but my father was also a peach. And he fell one day and cracked his head.
And all the king's horses and all the king's men.
We had some delicious peach cobbler, though.
Oh, fuck. Cannibalistic fruit head people who died on this bridge.
That sounds like an acid trip to me. Just walking around with the apples for heads. So, yeah, and we have this boom, it's a tense, this is awesome. I like this. Heath ends up getting cut off from Tara. And one thing I was wondering is, I was like, why are all these creatures in the dirt?
Yeah, I think I it
like,
must have been.
Did they dig up like a mafia burial ground?
You know what my theory on that was, is that maybe this little bridge community's idea for part of their defense was having this big truck full of sand that they could dump as a quick obstacle if they needed to, and that maybe somebody did trigger, you know, they were in an engagement with all these walkers coming on, and then somebody triggered on purpose or on accident the whole pile of sand, which maybe even killed some of the human beings that were in there, and they're all just under the full weight of that sand and are dead and still zombies or becoming zombies. And I guess that pulling that bag was the last, you know, bit of tension keeping the whole sand hill intact, I guess.
I'm okay with it.
Once it tumbles out, it's thin enough for them to start getting up. I'm like, I'm cool with this. This is fucking, and it's just it's an awesome original looking set piece. Like, it's been a while since we've had a zombie, you know, like, I mean, remember when they had the zombies that were melted into the asphalt and shit? Like, there's been some cool looking stuff, and this was also, I think it stands up pretty well.
The zombies that were smoldering on fire, those were cool too. That was Carol and them, right? And the little girls before Carol murdered them.
That's right. Good shit.
Before she shot them like a sick dog. So Heath gets cut off from Tara, and we go back to Oceanside Court present.
Mm-hmm. With her fucking chained to a radiator like she's Samuel L. Jackson's prisoner.
So this next sequence is Beatrice, Kathy, and Natanya meeting with Tara, who's chained to a radiator like a goddamn werewolf. It moves from here into them eating dinner and then them leaving town. So this is about 13... Well, I guess the whole thing is about... This is the bulk of the episode. This is like the meat, the 20-minute...
The 20-minute middle. Yeah.
So this whole sequence we should probably talk about as kind of one thing. And then we'll roll it into outside the camp. But we meet Natanya, Beatrice, and Kathy. They talk about bells and air horns and how they redirect the dead.
It's fucking smart. I like that idea as well.
Yep. Why are they so much smarter than Rick's group?
Right? I don't know. Man. Fuck.
It's fucking weird, right?
They definitely are. They just have more common sense, you know, strategies. Like, just fuck.
We meet, Natanya asks Tara where she's from. Tara says Atlanta. So Tara lies, talks about fishing boats. Beatrice presses her on it, and Tara is obviously lying. Natanya asks what she was doing here. She says they were scavenging, got knocked off the bridge, ended up in the inlet, and found her way here on the shore. A lot of this banter from Tara is also playful, right?
Yeah.
And then Tara says she snuck around to see if it was safe. Makes sense. I mean, that's a legit. When she says, "Why were you sneaking?" And I think of all the goofiness Tara's doing here, her saying, "I wanted to sneak around because I wanted to make sure that this place was safe."
Yeah, and it's funny. She holds up her handcuffed hand. Is like, "I'm not sure if it is still
right." I think that's important in this setting because in The Walking Dead, at this point, this deep into the apocalypse, you have to understand that that's just smart.
Yeah,
that's survival talk.
You can't blame anybody's caution, that's for sure.
100%. Natanya says that she'd normally kill her on sight. That's how they handle strangers. But since Tara spared Beatrice, that she's now kind of like, I'm not sure what to do. We've kind of
and Cindy's still vouching for her as well.
Yeah, Cindy's not in this meeting though.
No, she's not. That's what's interesting about her character is that she is not some higher up or some trusted person in this community. They kind of see her as silly headed.
Yeah, yeah. She's one of those weirdos who doesn't like to kill people on sight, right?
Yeah, fucking weirdo. Come on.
Weak. Just weak genetics. But anyway, they're gonna think it over, and then later that night, of course, they come for Tara. And they walk her into this house and they sit her down and they start. Natanya's like, I hope you like fish, because it's time you earned your keep, Tara. Know what I mean? Come on, you know you like it, Tara.
Oh, I was worried they were going to get hoods thrown on, and this was going to get weird. When I saw them open the door and there were candles lit, I was like, uh-oh, is this going to get gross? Is this going to get gross? We're about to get nasty.
It's only gross if Natanya's in the mix. Otherwise, I'm in. I'm in.
Otherwise, it's late night HBO. If
it yeah, is. Absolutely. Next thing you know, you hear David Duchovny. He's a voiceover. Fucking, I don't know.
I wrote another best-selling book and fucked a bunch of prostitutes.
Yeah, I did a lot of blow and we had a lot of sex. You guys want to see X-Files? but I do, there's just too many. I'm snickering like a child while watching this because they're talking about, Natalia's like, I hope you like fish. And I'm like, does she like fish?
I didn't even think about that.
Does she like fish?
You're like, you have no idea.
You have no fucking clue.
I like fish, but I'm really big on the clams. Yuck, 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 yuck,
wop, wop. Yay.
And then everybody fucking dons a top hat and a cane and starts fucking tap dancing in a line. You're like, what happened to this show?
He's like, hey. Everything.
Oh, fuck. Everything went downhill after Frank Darabont. I got to tell you, now it's all tap dance routines.
Oh, yeah. It's all tap dance routines and top hats and monocles. And my union boss.
Oof.
Yeah, I don't know, but... I don't know. But they don't know much about Tara, but she knows a little bit about fish. She's a fan.
Yeah.
But, yeah. We're talking
but
about...
But, like, you know, we're, this... We're,
no, go ahead.
What I liked about the scene a lot was just Natanya's switching of strategy. Like, I respect that. I was like, it makes sense if, like, okay, you're switching from they're in their automatic default setting of outsider equals antagonist. Like, we are not interested in talking to them 99.9% of the time. We just fucking waste you in that set. But this person spared one of your people when they had the chance to kill them, didn't kill your grandchild when she certainly could have overpowered her and taken her out. Mm-hmm. And Cindy, one of their people, is actively vouching for her and saying, no, we shouldn't. This is a decent person. So in order to have this conversation, I like that it's not like they go back. You know, like if this were the saviors, they would just walk back into the room while she's still, you know, chained to the radiator and start trying to pull some power play. Whereas I like here that it's like, all right, look, we're taking the handcuffs off. Here's dinner. Let's talk. Like, it makes sense that this is their strategy. And I liked this little change of pace. And it felt fucking realistic. It felt like what real people in this moment might actually do.
I agree. It does feel realistic in that they're like, we're going to invite her. We're going to all eat. She's probably hungry. We're going to try to get a sense for her. I'm going to bring in Beatrice and Kathy, the heavy hitters. And we're going to try to get to the bottom of this woman and see if what we're going to do. Because the alternative is grim. That's we're going to kill her. That's fucking dark after you sit down and have soup with somebody to then kill that person, especially somebody like Tara, who doesn't seem threatening whatsoever. It's just a victim of circumstance. And I think one of my favorite parts of this scene is the fact that Cindy, or Sydney Park, as the actress is known, you can tell that this is on her mind, of course, on a rewatch.
You can
see it on her face, like, boy, does Tara realize what this conversation is about right now?
Yeah, that it's like you are going to agree with this or you're pretty much put to death.
Right. And they go through it all and Tara talks, thanks Cindy, but Cindy seems distracted, says her mom showed her the way, and she's trying to show Rachel the way, referring to shooting people, of course. Tara scoffs down her soup and Natanya says that there's a lifetime supply of fish. Of course, Martin made that dumb joke. Natanya proposes that Tara could stay.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I believe her here. I believe that in this moment when she offers that, that it's like they're not looking to do a switcheroo. And as soon as she's like, they're not going to do a fucking Goodfellas moment where you walk into the room and there's fucking plastic action on the floor. Oh, shit. Like, it's not going to be that in this, when she offers it, you can be a part of this community. Like, we would rather have that. Like, I believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Tara brings up all the men. Matthew, take me through this.
This is some dark shit. Yeah, like, I love how, this is also just, again, the charm of Tara and Alana Masterson, where she's like, well, you know, my friend really can stay here? Where's all the dudes? Like, I love in her mind, she was probably even, like, thinking, it's like, is this like a lesbian psycho cult where they kill all the men? Like, I don't fucking know. Should I bring Heath here? Or is he just going to become a fucking dead man? But yeah, so she's kind of like half sporting, joking about it, and I love the tone shift around the table where everybody's like, Ooh, not. This is not fun dinner conversation. We were just talking about clams and fish. Now we got to talk about all our dead husbands and sons. Yeah. But yeah, dude, that is some heavy fucking genocide shit. Not that, not like Negan taking out one of your people and, hey, you guys got to pay for what you did to us. We're going to kill one of your guys. We're going to take every fucking man here, every boy over 10, and execute them. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is pretty dark. And, I mean, what's crazy about this is I'm supposed to believe that these women could keep this community going by themselves.
I mean, it's impossible.
In
dude.
my America, in Trump's dude, America, my white
dude,
America.
Dude, it's just biology. It's just biology, dude.
In my America, I don't believe it. How the fuck are these things still standing? Huh? The fuck's going on in here? What is this bullshit?
I mean, biology and shoulders and brain size or something. Oh, I don't fucking know.
Unbelievable. In my America. I work all day. I got to come home to this. Women run in the fucking communities. I mean, the soup looks great. The candles, stuff like that. It makes sense. The dinner.
That's all I could buy that.
The table looks remarkably set perfectly. I mean, a man probably couldn't do that too well.
Fuck.
Anyway, while I'm not being an asshole, what I'm trying to say is that this is such a tone shift, like you said. It's fucking great. I love how Tara just sort of throws it out there because you notice. I noticed immediately. I was like, "Where? Yeah. Where's the dudes? I don't see one dude."
Yeah, no, it's striking. And like, even when you get glimpses of the kids, it's all just little girls. Like, there are no even male children. Fucking dark shit.
Right. And then she talks about the skirmish, like you mentioned, and she says, "We kill on sight. We packed up. We moved with only our clothes. We stay hidden and we stay alive."
That is it.
Oh.
So it can be done.
So that's what you do. You pack up and you leave.
You just say, "Fuck this area."
Imagine that, Rick.
Can do the post-apocalyptic version of fleeing to Mexico.
Gee, Rick. Should have thought of that one, pal. Anyway, Natanya says she knows how it sounds, but she hopes Tara appreciates the honesty, hopes that she can be honest. Natanya calls her out on the lying about the boat work. Tara spills her guts about having a community. And at this point, she's sealing her fate, unknowingly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing I was going to ask you about. Do you think... here in this moment that it is Natanya herself who is like giving the silent nod of like, well, there's nothing more we can do. We got to fucking offer. Or is it a little bit of just collusion among Beatrice and the other woman whose name I can never remember to offer on their own?
No, I think Natanya has the final say here.
Yeah.
I don't think Beatrice and Kathy make that call unless we're doing one of those like switcheroo leaders, like Kathy's the real leader and Natanya's just the figurehead. But I don't think it's that sophisticated. I really think Natanya's calling the shots here. And I think that she came to a conclusion that this is the way it's going to be. I think that they're trying to be deceptive and fool Cindy into her not realizing what's going to happen. But I think Cindy kind of has an inkling.
An inkling, yeah.
As to what's going to go down here. Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, following their story, it would be that, oh, we took her out there and we let her go off to her people and she just didn't return. Okay, whatever, you know.
Right, yeah, like that, I think that would be too high of a reprimand.
We took her off to a real big farm upstate. She had plenty of room to run.
Yeah, I know. Listen, Ma, I know you haven't seen Nikki in a while. I understand. You know, Nikki had to get out of town. He had to go do a few things. He's in Italy, Ma. He's going to be fine, okay? Don't worry about Nikki. He's going to come back.
He's back in the old country.
He's in the old country. Just go down to the local church. Say a few novenas. Listen, Ma, Nikki's going to be fine. You got nothing to worry about with Nikki. He's okay.
All this dude's just straight washing his blood off with lava soap in the bathroom.
A smash cut to him getting garroted in a fucking warehouse chair somewhere. Fucking great.
Boy, this episode of Sopranos was dark. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, right? We're watching
Tony
Sopranos.
Soprano does not fuck around.
Fuck.
So, Natanya puts up the halt hand. We have that heavy silence for a second. And then, because Cindy agrees, Tara says a few smart things there. She says maybe our communities can work together. You know, Tara spills her guts about everything, bringing up a satellite station. That's what really was the issue. Once they realized, oh, she's an enemy of Negan.
Yes.
That didn't help.
It's interesting. On my first watch here, I actually was under the impression of, for one, I was like, well, this is both a bold move by Tara to be like, hey, I can share you guys' philosophy. I understand your vigilance. We've had to be this militant and fucking cold-blooded as well. We've had to off people in the name of our own safety. But I was also like, ooh, you might be overplaying your hand. And I, with the way when it cut back to Natanya's face, kind of looking a little like unsure about it, I was like, you're coming off as dangerous to them, and maybe that's part of the problem. But on the second watch, I think you're exactly right. It's that when she described a group large enough to have an outpost full of guys and then still be, you know, they imagine as a problem. Like, I think they probably, in my mind even, the guys who ran the satellite outpost might have been the ones, you know, the delegation in charge of applying pressure to whoever these people came from. That they were very aware of, oh, a satellite outpost, that means you're fucking under the thumb of Negan and you don't even know the kind of shit you can rain down on us.
That's right. Tara comments on how these people got what they deserve. She's still saying that whole thing. And but Tara does admit that's not why they did it. They did it so they could stay alive. Tara says maybe they can work together. They tell her that they just said they don't want people to know about this place. Tara says that eventually they will need help, and if they only see enemies, that's all they're ever going to find, right? Kind of something like that.
Yeah.
Right. That's what leads up to, because Cindy starts to agree with Tara, and that's what causes Natanya to step in and say, hold the fucking phone here. I don't need no dissent.
You got to fucking toe the party line, baby.
That's right. I'm with her, man, because she's got some ideas.
Hey, Cindy offers, no free thinking.
Cindy offers, and Natanya says no. So no routing plan, no gate signature, because Cindy wants to go out, because she probably has an inkling as to what's going to happen, as we stated, and maybe also, she thinks she can protect Tara.
Can we pause and rejoice over a rally plan and fucking gate sign out? Like, Jesus holy Christ. Fuck, again, some more practical, everyday procedures you could employ to keep your shit safe.
Yeah.
Good on them. Good on these ladies of Oceanside.
Thank fucking God. Unlike the Alexandria rejects and then Rick's rejects.
Right? Just a fucking bunch of mellowheads bumping into each other making fruit salad.
Yeah, exactly. So Tara says that there will be other chances. Tara makes the larder joke. And then later, Tara and Natanya talk. Natanya tells her good luck despite sucking at fist bumps. Tara heads off with Beatrice and Kathy. Rachel spits in the dirt as Tara walks by. It's kind of gross.
And Tara turns around and flips with a bird.
That's funny. I
laughed out loud at that.
I love pegging off a 9-year-old. That's the shit.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's why I'm not allowed within 100 feet of schools anymore, because I peg off kids all the time. I'm like, fuck you, little kid.
I just love that she had the fucking balls. We're like, whatever, you're a kid. Here's some grown-up shit. Fuck you, too.
Yeah, you're going to shoot me.
I love it. Oh, it's so good.
Outside the camp, Tara spots a bell. They find a walker tied up. Tara offers to take it out. And there's a couple of moments here where you can tell Tara starts to pick up on what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, this flew under my radar on the first watch, actually. Like, when the real attack started, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. What just happened? I was like, why is this going on now? I had to like rewind and kind of watch the lead up again. And I was like, oh, fuck, this was all the plan. Mm-hmm. They're leading her out here like she's fucking Old Yeller.
Absolutely. The way they're walking with her, one in back, one in front of her, you know, and then when they kneel down behind that tree, Tara has a good sense for people. You know, she can tell how far is everything. We're about halfway there. Of course, Tara might have some memory as to the journey. She might feel like she's being led around. She can tell. And then we hear that walker growling. They duck down behind the tree and Kathy gets behind her. There's a shot. They're kind of looking through the V in the tree and she has that knife brandished. Tara looks back, looks at the knife, looks at Kathy, and can just read it on her face. And it's in that moment where she says, I got it, and she stiffly walks away, and then she pretends she's going to stab that walker, and she turns and just fucking bolts. I like this. Shit. This is exciting. This is exciting and unexpected.
Yeah, this was, again, fucking the not just the pacing of the action itself, but the lead-up and the tension and the motivation behind it. All of this episode was really solid on those fronts of why is what's happening in front of us happening? It like I said, it threw me for a second, but in a satisfying way. Or like when I moved around and got that understanding of, oh, fuck, they were always planning to just take her out here and assassinate her, it really upped it for me, man.
And then you got like the Rudy factor with Tara, you know? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's like, this ain't no war. Like, this ain't Michonne or fucking Rick on the run. This is like, oh, I'm a little worried about you. I'm a little worried about you, baby.
Yeah.
Gotta fucking keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And, she's got that Rudy thing going. You're like, she's definitely not the most fit person in the world. That's okay. I'm just really rooting for her. I hope she makes this kick. And the whole time, I'm just rooting for her. And I think, you know, when we say things like real, what does that fucking mean? Like, let's drill down on it. Tara seems real. She's like a person that you can understand. She seems to be somebody who is realistically portrayed as a normal person, not like this samurai wielding Michonne woman. Like there's a comic bookness, a lack of comic bookness to Tara that makes her relatable and interesting to watch, because the odds are stacked against her, and we love to root for the fucking underdog.
Hell yeah. And that's the thing, like, there's been plenty of depth shaded to the characters of, like, Michonne and Rick, but they're just martial ability. You know, it's one of those things where it's kind of like the same thing as watching superheroes. It's like, you love to watch them, and we love our superheroes, but you don't identify with them in the sense of, like, that's me. You're just like, that's the good guy, and I like this guy, especially once you understand their story a little better. But Tara has the whole, that's the good guy, and you want him to get away because this is a decent human being, but also of, like, this is a normal person. Like what you said, like, this is a person who is like me. I identify them with them not just because they're good, but because this is a person who I work with or go to school with or a possible friend. It's like, this is just an everyday person who feels similar to you.
Yeah, just an unremarkable normal.
Just a fucking lame-o. Just a lame, normal, fish-eating normie.
Yep, she's just a fucking unremarkable.
Hey. Hey, that's fucking me on the screen over there.
She's just an unremarkable, normal person who has nothing remarkable about her. That's why we love her so much.
Yeah, just like all of us.
Yeah,
every
woman.
Yeah, it's true.
But it is true. There is, and it's, and a lot of it is that. A lot of it is she isn't this. She's not a caricature.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we found something like this with Denise, right?
Yeah, that's true as well.
And I think that's why Denise had to go. And we were upset about it. Yeah,
well-rounded, normal character, fucking dead.
Yeah, you got to thin the herd. Call the herd, right? A little bit. You get too many normals, and then you're in a situation where you're in trouble. So you can't. Sometimes you just got to off some of the normals. And that's just the way it goes. And that's what we did with Denise. We put a crossbow bolt through her eye so we could move on with lovely Tara.
With our lovely, lovely Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be slowed down.
There's a couple of cool things here. They chase her through the woods. She slides down that hill. She's clutching that blade. Her hand is visibly shaken. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
She's afraid. I mean, this is a life or death struggle she's in right now, and that's fucking hardcore.
That is it.
But she manages to get the drop on Beatrice yet again.
Uh-huh.
Where does Kathy go, by the way?
I don't even know. She's off running around somewhere.
Yeah. They had a great system right up until this, and then they had a terrible system.
Well, that's also what I get the notion of their system is that it's they have a system in place, and they have this philosophy of this cold-hearted, no exceptions, fucking take out anybody who we see, but they haven't had to put it into play that much. Like, I get that feeling from Beatrice in this moment. Once Beatrice gets the gun again and has it on Tara, and Tara's like, fucking, why? We had this worked out. Why are you trying to kill me again?
Sure.
Beatrice's shakiness here goes to show that she doesn't really want to kill her. You know, they kind of do at this point. They've been around her long enough, talked with her long enough to understand her vantage point. It's like you're watching Beatrice trying to stick to their philosophy and having a hard time of it.
Yeah, and it's funny because Beatrice annoyed me. Just her face. She just annoyed me. Just looking at her for no reason. Yeah. And I'm not beating up on the actress or anything. But I was just like, wow, she just annoyed me. And then this show does something which it seldomly has been able to do these days. It surprised me.
I agree. She was awesome.
What she said made sense. The performance from Brianna Venskis was good. I think that's her name. And I liked Beatrice in this moment where she has the rifle on Taryn. Same. And they talk. I like this. It's great.
Yeah. And this is the moment where I was talking about earlier of like, I genuinely understand this perspective of the Oceanside people. When she's saying, you don't get it. Like, that was just an outpost. There are way more of them than you. Like, she's already just speaking to the fact that, like, Tara is in post-introduction of Negan thinking. Like, she still thinks, hey, yeah, we were successful. We got him. And she's broadening her world for her here, going, no, you have no fucking idea. They are way bigger than you understand. And as much as I hate to do this, you know, and even by the end of the episode, I still have in the back of my, like, the way Beatrice says it here, she's saying, you know, you could still give up that information, like, if it gained something for you. And you can see Tara going in her own mind, like, thinking, like, no, I wouldn't do that. I'm a good person. I wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But even I can imagine a scenario where Negan is fucking holding the bat up again to somebody's head who Tara cares about and is saying, hey, I know there's this one group of people we used to have our thumb under, and they ran off. I want somebody to find them. I know they're out there somewhere. Has anybody run into them? You better give me some fucking information on them, or I'm going to start fucking batting heads again. Mm-hmm. And Tara would crack. She would go, fuck it. Yeah, I know where they are. I know who you're talking about.
Sure.
Like, so it's one of those situations where even as noble as you want to be about it, I understand they're going, that information is too much of a liability. Even if you're a truly good-intentioned person, you don't want to give us up, can't fucking let you go. You know too much. So in this moment, and like you said, and the performance of the actress playing Beatrice really, you know, is what truly sells it. But I'm like, fuck, as much as I love Tara, dude, I get it. I might not take the rifle down either.
Yep. I also think what you have going on here is one of the things that I like out of Beatrice here is how she's saying things like, all your people are dead. You have nothing left. That is Beatrice trying to gather the will to kill Tara.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. By telling herself this woman has nothing left, she has no friends, right? I almost feel like she's trying to convince herself to pull the fucking trigger here. Cause it's hard. You're trying to kill, you had soup with this girl and you're face to face and she spared you. What are you gonna do? You know?
Yeah. No, I agree. And like I think that's exactly it. I think this is, you know, they've had this policy, you know, nailed up above their fucking doors all over the place of all outsiders must be killed. But I don't think it's really had to be put to the test that much.
Right.
And this is still a tough moment.
And this is the revelation, because it wasn't mentioned at dinner, but what actually happened. Saviors killed all their men. Every boy over 10 lined them up, shot them in the head. We tried to fight and they won. We were supposed to work for them and we just left. We can't let you lead them back to us. Beatrice says she's sorry. And right before murdering Tara, she gets jumped by Cindy. So Cindy shows up again, and Tara splits. I like that. I like that. That was so realistic to me.
That Cindy popped back in?
That not only did Cindy pop back in, but that Tara's instinct was to just sprint. As soon as Cindy bangs into her, she's not like, oh my God, let me help Cindy. She fucking bolts.
That's right.
I think that's a realistic response. And then of course, Cindy runs her down. And they start talking again. And Cindy demands her to swear that she won't say anything. And she really presses this issue.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's absolutely crucial.
But this dialogue is great. Tara asks, why would I tell anyone? And that's when Cindy says, because you think you can get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Fuck. I thought Beatrice had said that, but you're right. This is the moment with Cindy.
Yeah.
Why
did we kill those people? Why did you kill all those people at the satellite station? Because you thought you had to, but none of you had to. You just did. Nobody's evil. They just forget who they are. You have to swear. Tara says that some people are evil. That's why I have to get back now. Tara turns and Cindy demands the swear. Tara swears. Cindy gives her pack to Tara, food and water. She leads Tara to the bridge. So, you know, this goes back to the beginning of the episode, all this stuff where they're talking about having to kill. This started with the conversation between Heath and Tara. It moves its way through the episode with Beatrice, what Natanya's standing orders are, and of course what Cindy says. And that's a lot of the theme of this episode is having to kill. and what that means, and does that make you evil, and can you live with it, and what is it? What does it all mean? Is it evil? Is it not? Why are you doing it? And Tara explicitly says, we're not doing it because we're moral. In other words, Tara admits, we didn't kill those bad people because we were making a moral choice to rid the world of evil. We did it because we were trying to get food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these people are like, we're not killing people because we're evil. We're killing people because we cannot have our camp exposed. Because the last time our camp was exposed, every male and boy was executed. We just can't have that.
Yeah.
It's crazy fucking, it's a crazy situation they find themselves in. And it's really hard to moralize. You know, it's really hard to say anything about any of it because you're not in that situation, and it makes it really challenging. And that's why I thought this episode was a success. That all of that stuff right there that they brought into it. The fact that we focus on Tara here, which I think is a good move. These scenes are great with Tara. All her stuff with Oceanside and with Beatrice. Just good stuff. Good stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a tightly focused episode. It is very much all Tara, and then second most, you know, Cindy, and then, you know, the little council of Natanya and Beatrice and them. It's a tightly focused episode.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we continue to remember that Rick and company murdered 30 to 40 of Negan's men, whatever the fuck it was. It was a lot.
That's it. It was a lot.
It has to. It's important that is brought up. I mean, that's a small restaurant full of people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've heard about a small restaurant full of people all being murdered.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fucking people. Obviously, it's a much different circumstance. But I'm just saying, in pure, how much death happened in one go. I mean, you hear about a fucking an active shooter. You hear about some sort of act of terrorism where a bomb kills 16 people. You're like, fuck.
Yeah.
And we're talking like 30 or 40 in one fucking go. That's a ton of bodies, man.
Yeah. That's not like a skirmish.
You're telling me every one of those people was like the pure evil and deserved it bullshit that they're trying to sell us? And I think it's cool that we see that coming back because it's important.
I agree. And that is a larger theme I would like to see get pressed more here. I like the way Cindy presses her of like, you know, no, like don't hide behind this concept of evil. It's you are in opposition to other people making choices, and you are making choices in response. Like, don't bury your choice in a whole bunch of, well, I got to shrug my shoulders. I had to. Like, no, you made a choice. Like, that's what you did. Like, and you have to accept that.
Right. So we move over to the bridge. Cindy offers Tara cover to cross the bridge. Tara asks why Cindy isn't like the rest of them. Cindy returns the same question to her. Why aren't you? And I think, what did you take from that?
That's what's interesting here. I like that in the scene right prior to this, you know, the exchange they have where she makes her swear, you know, they seem to be coming from opposite places of Tara being like, no, there are people that are evil in the world and we have to do this. And she... Cindy is returning with the whole, no, we've just had to make our choices and they're flawed. Like, it seems like Cindy has a little more of an awareness of, yeah, these choices aren't good, but I still understand why they're making them.
Sure.
But I like that they're both kind of implying that they're in the same exact spot, that these are the same person of trying to navigate these decisions in a way that's compromising and not so dogged one way or the other.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So they start moving across, the tarps come down, we get a little surprise zombie birthday party. Surprise! We're all here behind the tarps.
High school football team just busted through.
Fucking zombie prep rally. And Tara runs across the cars. We kind of cut back.
I like this.
What's that?
I said I like this. I like the fucking the shots of the parallel running along on tops of the cars. The fucking dusty zombies getting offed from behind by, you know, Sniper Cindy.
I liked it too. I liked it too. The bridge back in time. We see Heath's getting overwhelmed. Tara goes over the bridge. I like the way she goes over the bridge. That was just cool cinematics. And then the bridge, Tara gets across. She can't see Heath, but she does see a female walker. Which apparently when you get bit by a walker, you turn into a female.
Yeah, this is Lady Heath.
Lady Heath in the house. She finds his glasses, finds a tire mark on the road, assumes it's his. thinks maybe it was Heath, and then she finds the PPP pass.
Yeah, that I didn't quite understand. What was the PPP? Do you get that?
I'm sorry. Did the PPP pass that Heath had?
Yeah. What the fuck is the triple P?
I honestly don't really remember, but Karen Lomas is in chat. She probably remembers.
I'm about to say eagle eye.
But yeah, I'm not sure. But PPP must have meant something.
Must have meant something. Yeah.
Written on it. I don't know what exactly, but it might have been some kind of signal or something that we don't quite understand yet.
Yeah, I think so. That's how she interprets. She's, I think you left this. I hope you left this. And it looked very much placed, like it, or it had been dropped out the window or left right there.
Right.
You know, facing up and everything.
Right. I don't know why, but I know it was. And then that's the yep.
Well, oh, I don't think we should go past her.
Oh, Jesus strutting, Christ, her getting home. Yeah.
Her strutting home. Oh, dude, this scene was devastating. This was actually really fucking heart pulling for me when she, you know, I don't care about her going to getting the sunglasses. You know, she's obviously still looking for things to bring back to Denise and trying to scavenge for a few more supplies on the way home. But when she walks up all fucking smiley to the gates, and it's not just, you know, the fact that Denise has been killed and she's not aware, but just everything that's gone down, like how they have really just been cut down at the fucking knees.
Sure.
It's just been totally shattered. Like, it's all, I think it was a great, 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 great choice of direction to have that entire revelation without words and just on Eugene's face. I think
I
that
agree.
Was an excellent choice, and it was effective and heartbreaking, man.
Yeah,
to just know to that they, you know, that Eugene especially, him of all the people who really much had a, you know, a relationship with Tara and a good friendship and a crush, and for him to be the one to have to look her in the eye and really wear it all and break it to her. Fuck, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And Josh McDermott's fucking good here.
Yeah, I do. I think if you really want to crush morale, you just put that fucking sad mug at the gate.
That's right.
Fucking guy. Fucking the incredible sulk over here. Awesome. Welcome to Alexandria. I'm going to cry all over you.
Oh, fucking Christ.
Monsters. But no, I didn't mean to shit on what you're saying, but it said a lot without saying anything, which is something I could appreciate.
That is it. And then it's just the last scene here of Rosita talking to her inside the doctor's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, is she asking for an escape just for herself? Or was she saying trying to find a route to another community for the sake of Alexandria? Because I kind of got the impression that it was her being like, I just want to get the fuck out of here.
Her saying, well, her actual words are, we don't have to sit here. I think she's trying to, like, I don't know if this is her saying, I want to abandon this operation or I want to create like a strike team.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell. She says something like,
I couldn't tell. Yeah.
She says, tell me a place, I'll go. Maybe she's just saying, let's get the fuck out of here. Like, they don't want to live under Negan's rule.
Yeah. I think she's one of the people who just can't stomach it.
I appreciate Rosita here. I would be in the same fucking position as she is.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what was compelling about that. I like this descent, you know, of her being like, no, the guy who fucking smashed Abraham's goddamn head in front of me, I'm not going to bow to this guy.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
She does say something about, we can square this, I believe. Which means that they're planning on some kind of revenge. But man, Rosita, sometimes you just got to like get the fuck out of Dodge. That would
chill,
be my
girl.
First step. Get the fuck out of Dodge and hide.
Then see what you can do at a distance. Regroup.
Right. But I don't. What do you think will happen here? Do you think Tara will tell her about this place immediately?
Well, no. I mean, in this very scene, you know, her response, you know, she's sitting there looking at the doctor, you know, thing she picked up on her way home.
I didn't see
Karen,
anything, yeah.
Karen brought up in the chat. Yeah. That she has a bracelet on, which I think she might have gotten from Oceanside. It's a seashell bracelet, and the camera does, you know, Karen pointed out, the camera really lingers on that shot of her wrist on that bracelet, and she's looking at it, and she still decides to go, no, I didn't see anything. There is no place like that out there.
Right.
And I don't see her backing off on that soon, or at least right away. Like, I imagine... You know what? If I had to bet, if I had to put a predictor on this, I would believe that if an alliance comes about between Alexandria, the Kingdom, the Hilltop, they're going to all be like, okay, we're willing to fight together, but we don't got guns. Like, we didn't see any at the hilltop. We didn't see any at the kingdom. Maybe the kingdom has a few. I mean, I guess maybe the kingdom had a small couple for its knights or whatever. But I didn't really remember seeing a lot. So I have this feeling we're going to see Tara in that moment go, I know a place with a lot of guns. Maybe we can try to, maybe we'll fucking throw a fucking dove their way and see if we can make something happen.
Right. I like it. What do you, we'll get to that in our final thoughts. Let's bang out a few listener comments. And then we will get to some of our final thoughts. How's that sound? Does that work for you, buddy boy?
It sounds good to me.
All right, let's cue them up. All right, I got Craig Dealey here. Ooh. Craig says, I like this too. Tara was both believable and likable, and I enjoyed her ready wit in the face of potential death. Again, though, the concern with Negan is the rank brutality. There can only be so many times he can do this. Every male over 10 years old, really? Before he is found out, the only way to get away with it would be to kill everyone, full stop, or period if you prefer. Every community left, which has in some way been so cruelly mistreated, will have at least one person with an eye on revenge. Literally, in Carl's case. Too soon? Good shit. I like Craig's observations here. I thought that too, killing every male over the age of 10. And then the other thing I was thinking about, how much do you think they did more damage to Negan than Rick did on his satellite strike?
The Oceanside people?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Because holy shit, the punishment is way different.
You know what? Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I bet they, if they have this stash level of guns, fuck, maybe they did. Maybe they really did put a fucking hurtin' on the Saviors early on that it took the Saviors a while to recover from, and they really let loose on them.
Yeah, pretty crazy, man.
Damn, that's a point.
Something to think about. Who do you got?
I've got, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but I want to read the full comment from Mr. Brian Campbell. And he said, one shiny spot from this Nothing Really Happens episode is that we got to revisit a character that, for the lack of a better term, like you mentioned, is more real than any character we've enjoyed recently. Real meaning that in her conversation with the Amazonian tribe, she speaks from the heart. Even when caught in a larger-than-life lie, oh, good pun on you, Mr. Campbell. Outside of that, yeah, the sand bees were interesting, if illogical. If they were trapped in the sand, why would they suddenly be able to crawl out of it? But there wasn't much else that was noteworthy. I'm really hoping that my jump-the-tiger feeling that I was getting a couple of weeks ago doesn't continue. Thank you, LSG Media, for making the season bearable. No problem, Brian.
Good shit, Bri. And Craig Dealey is also in his chat thread, he said, Rick's people killed, what, 50 men in all, and for what he was prepared to let them off with just Abraham, Glenn was on Daryl. So either he has mellowed or they did something even worse. So Craig also brought up that point of the disparaging, of the disparity in the punishing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point.
Interesting. But yeah, that's some of the couple of the comments. There's quite a few that we got this week. We appreciate that. If you want to get comments, you can check us out on facebook.com/groups/LSG on TWD. That's facebook.com/groups/LSG on TWT. Or you can send us an email at hosts@libertystreetgeek.net. That's hosts@libertystreetgeek.net. Matthew, let's wrap it up, baby. Who do you got? What do you got for some final thoughts this week on this week's episode? Or you want me to go? You tell me.
You go for it. You lead here.
All right. So the first thing I want to talk about with this episode and why I think I liked it so much is because Tara is a real person and she behaves in a real person way, and Cindy is a real person and she behaved in a real person way. And it was nice to see some activity and some interactions grounded in a type of realism that I feel like would be a lot of people that you could come across. Now, there's always going to be assholes and scumbags who are going to try to take and steal and undermine you and dominate you and all that bullshit. We know that this is true. But it was refreshing to see a good old regular person behaving in a good old regular person manner put into the situation in The Walking Dead. One of the reasons The Walking Dead was so compelling in the beginning was because everybody was an underdog. all the time. And they were always trying to navigate the issues they found themselves in. They weren't martially proficient. They weren't expert zombie killers yet. They struggled. It was hard. Those odds made it compelling and fun, and the struggle was interesting to watch. And I feel like sometimes that can be lost. We've said before on the show that the zombies become a bit of a nuisance, and they largely are, in that people become the greatest enemy, and we still see that this is the case. But it was nice to see some good old-fashioned real people behavior out of Tara. And I think that's why I like this episode so much. It's a standalone episode that has a pretty definitive beginning, middle, and end. I think it's a cool adventure for Tara. It's obviously a story seed for something going forward in the season, which I think could be interesting. I actually liked Natanya in her little setup here. They were compelling. I liked that they found themselves in this weird situation. They weren't just straight murderers, but they were also but they were also ruthless if they had to be, if they needed to be. Kill people on sight, that's hardcore. There's some intrigue there. I mean, I don't think there's any more depth to that village, honestly. I'm not saying there's a lot more depth there, but, you know, Cindy's interesting. Natanya's kind of interesting. Beatrice grew on me rather quickly. And I enjoy this episode against the rest of the season. I'm not saying it's one of the best Walking Dead episodes, because it just isn't. But it is, in this season, a standout episode so far. And I think a lot of that has to do with Tara. And there's just more of a dynamic to her. Her personality is more dynamic than everybody else's. And it just translates better into something watchable. Yeah. And that's what I like about it.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I totally 100% agree with you about Tara. And I, for one, I hope that her character is further elevated into, you know, we have two big vacancies in our main cast now. And it's kind of interesting to watch, like, okay, who's going to sift into the more focused roles in these larger characters? And I really hope Tara is, you know, given the same amount of attention, really, to be honest, a lot more attention than even Abraham got. I think that she has just got so much potential. She's interesting. And while this is certainly not the best episode of The Walking Dead, not by a long shot, it's definitely Tara's best episode since her introduction with, you know, the governor, everything. She's great in this. She fucking carries the episode. As far as larger things I really like about this, what it sets up, I really like imagining, like we've already, you know, talked about, one of my favorite things to predict about what could come is how does Rick, how does anybody navigate the diplomatic problems in dealing with all these communities and trying to build alliances? Like how, you know, I really like the idea of these places are so separate, you know, a lot of them weren't even aware of each other's existence, that they have very specific and very different ideologies. And having to be an outsider and navigate that is really interesting to me. I think that is, like, as far as the series onward goes, I'm like, that's your meat right there, is just how are you going to be forced to not go to the gun so quickly and actually have to work these things out. And for the community like Oceanside, like, they have this very harsh prevailing mindset of, you know, kill all outsiders fucking on sight. What do you have to provide to them to change their mind? What do you have to do? What do you have to bring to the table? How do you have to behave in order to bring this group into the fold? That's an interesting question to me. I'm like, I would like to see that, like the way that you have to approach them in the future. You know, if Alexandria wanted to reach out to them, it's fucking interesting. And then just as a whole, I still really like this introduction of communities thing, because it makes the world, the post-apocalyptic Walking Dead universe, not feel boundless. And I think that's a good thing. I think there's this trick of, especially in the second season, maybe third, that, wow, you know, we might be the only ones, and the world is just open, boundless, everything for ours for the taking. And I like this hard realization of, nope, there are other people, and they're staking their claim. They are putting their fucking flags down and saying, this is ours. And you can't just think of, where are we going to go next? We can go anywhere. It's, well, we can go over here, but the Saviors have this area. Well, we can go over here, but also the Oceanside people kind of have this area. And, like, it shrinks their world in a compelling way of, you really have to start being, you can't just be fucking fancy free Rick and company shooting dogs on the road and having barbecues. Like, you have to start kind of paying attention to the world in a more nuanced way again. And I like that pressure. And I want to see that brought up to the forefront. I want to see Maggie as a character elevated. I want to see Tara as a character elevated, really forefront characters again. and start fucking having to take charge in this kind of like ambassador-like way of being. You still have to fucking go to your sword at times, but I like this idea of the people who can actually be diplomatic are the ones that we're going to have to look to. And that's fucking good stuff to me. I want them to keep up on this path. And I really hope next fucking episode we get a looking back at the kingdom, because I think Ezekiel is another character who has that kind of intriguing possibility about him, that charisma that can build bridges. I think that's interesting shit. So, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. It's funny. On the one hand, part of me has to just let go of what I call like geography fuckery. When you start to realize, I want to see a Walking Dead map and be like, how have none of these people found each other based on these runs? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So once you kind of get over that and throw that out the window, you start to see some of this potential. And I like that. And, you know, going back to your point, what is it? How are they going to sway them? I think they're going to sway them by convincing them that they have a bid for Negan's destruction, and this is how it's going to work. And I think once that occurs, it will sway them to go ahead and do that, because they have to know that you can't just kill people on sight. If Negan sends a man out on patrol, or if Tara was literally on a patrol, if you have a group with any skill whatsoever at relaying their location, where they're looking, plotting out on a map where they're going, and you say, Matt, here's what I'm going to do, boss man. Matt, you're the boss man in this scenario. I'm going to out. Here's the map. We're going to sit down and talk. I'm going to go this to here, here, and here. I'm going to hit these various checkpoints at here, here, and here. Assuming nothing happens, I will be back. Okay?
There we go.
So I go along all these checkpoints. I don't come back. You have a policy that says if Dean's 2 days late, we go out looking for him. So you guys go out. You have a map. You follow the fucking same exact checkpoints. And you end up looking and finding out where I went missing. You might end up running into this fucking place if they took me out. If they blew me away in the woods. Now, who knows? Maybe they got a fucking wood chipper. Maybe they got a pet shark they feed these people to and they're tough to find. But it's only a matter of time, like Tara said at dinner, which of course is going to be part of the selling point to get them involved, because they don't just introduce this community for Tara to sit on the secret and never have them come in the show again, right? So of course not. So we know in a meta sense that they're coming back. And I think that's what I'm thinking is Netanya has to understand that a basic scout goes out and goes missing. People are going to look for that fucking guy. And if you keep blowing people away on site that cross your imaginary borders, then you're going to get spotted. You're going to get found out. You're going to go out there and somebody's going to hear something and something is going to happen. Yeah. They run around with guns all the time. I don't know if they use them a lot, but you can't just pop off rounds in the zombie apocalypse, expect nobody to come find you.
Ooh, it's a good point.
Maybe that's why they keep all the firearms locked up.
Yeah, and they use spears.
Maybe that's why they do that, to maintain a low profile.
But also you're ringing bells. That's a good idea for distracting zombies, but a person walking around out in the woods where that's, you know, this is the damn zombie apocalypse, you're like, that's a human being. Like, right. Systematic bell ringings that turn on and off. Nah, that's a person. Somebody's over there.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to realize it's only a matter of time before you do have to get involved. But yeah, man, it's, you know, looking back on it, I think that, is Oceanside fine? Yeah, they're fine, man. Like, I'm trying not to be nitpicky this week because the episode didn't annoy me. I think Tara really is responsible for this week's episode. And that was, in my opinion, the best part of this episode, 100%.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, I guess we're going to get out of here unless you have anything else to say.
No, that's it. I'm all whipped out. I got to go eat some salted fish on the beach.
Yeah. We're going to have a couple of salted fishies. I hope you've seen the way I can eat a couple of trout, you guys.
I like the eyes and the bones.
Mmm, delicious. I'm going to eat fish all day.
All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning into another episode of the Walking Dead podcast.
by LSG Media. If you like what you heard, remember to share the episode with friends. Get us out there. Get our name out there. Help us out. And you know what? Check out LibertyStreetGeek.net. We got all kinds of podcasts over there. Plenty to listen to. Science fiction, film, Game of Thrones, True Detective, and more. All right. We'll see you next time.